I'm so glad that we do this ceremony. I'm so glad that we started it. We started it several years ago. Put it in September, kind of like as a renew, because sometimes, you know, since school starts in September, September can be kind of a time for renewal, like starting again, beginning again, or at least that's what it feels if you have kids in school and if you used to go into school, there's that starting all over again that happens with September. And so I'm so glad we do it. And I just want to note that I'm so glad we're doing it online because Gary... where is he? He is here. He's from Australia. He does our Capitol Hill sit, and I'm so happy that he joins us. It feels every time I see him, I feel like we're so wide, so big, so large that we take in and encompass the whole world when we get together like this. And so, especially ceremony, it's so special and precious. When we do this, so I think a forgiveness ceremony, what we're doing actually is, for me, it's an act of grace, basically for ourselves, not grace for other people, but grace for us. It's sort of like an act of allowing ourselves something, giving ourselves permission to step into something. That in our busy lives, in our go, go, go kind of way of being, we don't always let ourselves step into. I think doing a ceremony like this is an act of kindness. So that there's it's like a softening, allowing ourselves to soften and disengage with something that's rough and callousy and hard, and we're softening enough to let ourselves let it go. You know, you could think of this ceremony as a gift, like a gift of generosity to ourselves, so that we are actually generously giving ourselves permission or freedom, basically an opportunity to let something go, to free ourselves from something. And then I guess I have a sense that the ceremony itself, the fact that we do it together, the fact that there's so many of us, and it's a private ceremony, and yet it's together as a sangha, there's a way in which we provide refuge and protection for each other so that we can actually begin to take forgiveness and reconciliation seriously in our felt sense body system, and not just something we'd like to do, but we don't actually follow through on it. And this is a way to give us an opportunity to follow through on forgiveness and reconciliation. So I'm going to talk about the forgiveness side, and Tim's going to talk about the reconciliation side. So we just take turns. Last year I did reconciliation and he did forgiveness. And so this year it's my turn to do forgiveness. And I looked up the sutta. I thought, well, I should find some kind of sutta that would point to what I want to say. And I found, I have never seen this sutta before ever in my life. And I found this sutta very short, very to the point. It's like 34 words. It's the shortest sutta I've ever seen. But it's very much to the point of what I wanted to talk about. It's called the Bala Sutta, B-A-L-A. And it stands for fools, F-O-O-L-S. So here's what the Buddha said. Monks, practitioners, let's think of it that way. There are These two are fools. Which two? Here's the two. The one who takes up a burden that hasn't fallen to them, and the one who doesn't take up a burden that has. These two are fools. Very short. The one who takes up a burden that hasn't fallen to them, and the one who doesn't take up a burden that has. I think that is forgiveness. And it's why I think that forgiveness is a purification practice. That's what it's thought of in this Buddhist kind of cosmology. You think of forgiveness as a purification practice because that's pretty much what it does as a practice itself. So I want to give you these two. I want to look at this in these two ways that the Buddha pointed to see how to kind of show you how forgiveness is what this sutta is pointing to. So the first one is this one who takes up a burden that hasn't fallen to them. And I think that is this burden that we walk around with, carrying other people's crap. And we carry it all the time. We live in samsara and we live in a world of harm. Hurt, harm, suffering, pain. It's just a lot. It's the cycle of the human condition. And that human condition is this cycle of suffering. And so we live in that world and we are subject day by day by day by day by day to all the little micro, macro aggressions that go on around us for whatever reason. All the schisms and all the non-schisms, just people not paying attention. We all know this because we do the same thing. That's the second half. But the first half is the picking up of a burden that hasn't fallen to us. So when we let all that schisms, all that harm, all that difficulty rest upon us, it builds a lot of resentment in us, and cynicism and criticism, aversion, and we walk around with it. And it's funny because rarely have I come up on someone who I thought harmed me, and they're walking around sad. Most every person I've ever talked to that I felt like they harmed me, they don't seem sad about it. I'm still sad about it, but they seem to have gone on with their lives pretty much not even aware that I'm still carrying their stuff. And so the foolishness of this is carrying someone else's harm every day of your life, life after life. So forgiveness is this purification process that gives us the willingness to unburden ourselves with other people's burdens. It is this willingness to release ourselves from carrying it any longer. Basically, because it's not our burden to carry. It's not our burden to carry the wrongdoings of another. Because karma in Buddhism is connected to each of us being responsible for our own behaviors. So when we pick up the wrongdoings of another and then carry the weight of it, we are ourselves doing ourselves a disservice and a harm. So when we do a forgiveness practice, I think we're basically giving ourselves permission to release ourselves from having to carry that burden any longer. The oftentimes I think the reason why we carry it is because we get trapped in that cycle of wanting retribution, or we want some kind of apology, or we want some kind of act of contrition, you know, that people somehow acknowledge the wrongness of their behavior. And if they don't, then we carry it for them, that wrongness. And forgiveness, I think, is the act of letting that go, releasing the need to carry someone else's burden, someone else's wrongdoing that they have their own karma to deal with. We don't have to deal with it. And we don't have to walk around and snarl in that cycle of resentment and retaliation because of that wrong. So then the second half of this purification process goes to the point that the other fool is the one who doesn't take up a burden that has basically fallen to them. And that is, we don't acknowledge our own harm. So forgiveness also is a purification around our own wrongdoings, our own harms that we do. It's about coming to terms with our own conduct that causes harm to another and pain to another. It's a way of coming face to face to our, with our own defilements and the little meanness we do and the behaviors we do out of anger and fear and worry. All of that we come face to face with and have to contend with it. So in a way, it puts us, when we actually do a forgiveness ceremony, we do it with this sincerity that we're coming to terms with the reality that we also are human and we could and have caused harm to other people. The thing about the forgiveness, though, in both of these aspects, like even in this aspect of coming to terms with our own forgiveness, with our own harm, with what we've done, is that it doesn't really matter if other people forgive us. I think this is the thing that was the hardest for me to understand. But even if somebody were to come to me from something I've done, some harm I did, and said, it's okay, Tuareg, you are forgiven, which we do as part of our ceremony. You are forgiven. It's true that we can get forgiveness from another, but we are still responsible for our own karmic implications. So just like we don't pick up another person's burden, we cannot give our burden to someone else. And we carry our own the karmic implications of our own actions. So a ceremony that's couched like this creates a space for us to begin to see the seriousness of our behavior and the foolishness of taking on somebody else's pain or somebody else's burden. In a way, it renews us and creates a space where we can come in right relationship with harm, our actions, and the actions of another. Oftentimes, we live in a society where we walk around with a lot of guilt and a lot of shame. And it doesn't make any sense more and more to me to walk around with guilt and shame. The guilt, and I think Angulimala, who was a murderer, killed a lot of people and found his way to Buddha and became a monk under Buddha's order. And he would go on alms rounds with the Buddha, and people would throw rotten food at him and rocks at him. And, you know, he's in his robes, but they're so mad because he killed so many people that when they would walk around, they would be so angry at just the sight of him, robes or no robes. And Buddha at some point told Angulimala to bear it. You know, this is the this is the implications of his actions. And granted, he had come to terms with his actions for himself, and he had taken up the holy life, and he was a practitioner and had started living this life of renunciation. He still had to bear the responsibility of his own actions. So when we do these ceremonies like this once a year, it gives us an opportunity to talk about the seriousness of our conduct, to look at the seriousness of our own conduct, to begin to feel into the practice of forgiveness, and as Tim is going to talk about reconciliation, and we can begin to take on, renew ourselves for a new year to try to minimize the amount of harm we cause, and minimize the amount of wrongdoing of others we're going to pick up, so that next year, moving into this next year, we free ourselves from the burdens of other people's harms, and we take care on our behavior so that we don't just cause a lot of unnecessary harm that we will not want to bear in the future. And I think the last thing I want to say is that I think that this is a way in which we both reconcile, not reconcile, that we bring harmony and equanimity to our hearts and minds in this place that we can actually step into the truth of just being a human being and what it means to be human and not always walk around with a burden sack on our backs, carrying it around. We can actually let that burden go. Thank you so much for your attention. Let's see what Tim has to say about reconciliation.
Thank you, Twerri. All right, so Twerri talked about that burden that we pick up, you know, both the fool who picks it up and the fool who doesn't pick it up, and how forgiveness, you know, particularly this kind of a ritual we're going to be doing, a ceremony, is a way of practicing releasing that. Tonight, I want to talk about reconciliation, which in some ways talks more about when, for some reason, we can't set that burden down. We just keep picking it up. And we're blessed to have a connection or a willing person that we can explore this topic with. We can explore really our pain and how we've been hurt and also hear how we've caused harm. This is where reconciliation, at least my expression of or my exploration tonight, will explore. To begin with, I think as we've practiced as Dharma practitioners, we start to realize the nature of thought, you know, how thought just kind of comes randomly. It doesn't seem to have a lot of substance to it. We stop believing everything that we think. We start to hold it with more of a spaciousness. We start to see more and more the illusionary nature of thought, including our beliefs and our views. You know, the places that we hold very dear, the thoughts of what we believe is true. We also start to realize that our dukkha, our suffering, is somehow very tied to our belief and thought, in our beliefs, in our opinions, in our views, especially ones that define ourselves and that define someone else, the ones that say, I am right and you are wrong. You know, that hardening of layers, hardening of position. This becomes a really entrenched area of view and opinion. So we practice letting go of those views and opinions. Now, interpersonal conflict, you know, conflict between individuals, between groups and individual. There's so many different ways this happens, person to person, group to group. This is some of the more entrenched ways that we hold that view of I'm right and you are wrong. And of course, the more we hold that, reconciliation becomes impossible. And forgiveness, perhaps, is impossible. So learning how to see that. So learning how to work with reconciliation. this is really trying to turn back to the relationship, to bring the relationship, the two people, the group of people, back into connection, back into a sense of harmony, of interrelationship, to heal, to feel that sense of connection again. And sometimes this is possible. Sometimes it's very possible. And sometimes it's very difficult. You know, we need that really that committed participation from both parties. And sometimes we simply don't have that. And yet there's elements that can really be explored and brought forth, even when you're doing this by yourself, even when you're exploring this reconciliation, even ideally having someone who can be a compassionate witness. So I wanted to share a few thoughts that came to mind about reconciliation and hopefully be a benefit. As I was working on it this afternoon, just it tends to be a little bit more of a process, and that's just what came up. And you can see parts of it which may be helpful and parts which perhaps aren't. And you can release which are and which ones that you want. So we move toward reconciliation. We really, the first step is to be willing to move toward the pain, to be willing to turn toward that tenderness, that hurt, the injury, the insults, the betrayal, the abandonment, the harmful actions of body, mind, of speech, both the ones that we've received, that we've endured, and the ones that we've perpetuated, the ones we've caused through our own actions. But how we move toward that pain is so essential. It's so essential that we do it with skill, with wisdom, and with compassion. Otherwise, it's likely to really perpetuate the harm. It's liable to cause a re-traumatization of our own injury, our own hurts. Or if we're the one who caused harm and we're working with reconciliation, we don't want to collapse into a paralysis of guilt and of shame, or push away with defensiveness and counterattacks. To find this place to really hear each other's pain, to listen deeply. It takes patience. It takes a release of our normal time scale of how long this takes, because forcing things, it doesn't work well. It's this kind of process has its own timing, its own way it unfolds. But at the same time, we don't want to take so much time to ignore it. So hopefully it's going to go away if I don't deal with it. So it's not about avoidance. It's about engaging with your fullness of your heart, but also being patient for how it unfolds. It's also important to have a sense of container or structure to help hold what comes up. Because if you're really doing this, if you're really lucky enough to be able to do this with another person who you've harmed or they've harmed you, you need a container to be able to hold that tenderness. So how is this going to be held? What are the ground rules? What are the structure? Does it need facilitation? These are all important questions to be agreed upon and met upon. So it's safe enough for everybody. It's not going to be perfectly safe, but safe enough you can show up. And ideally, a commitment to stay the course. If this won't happen, may not happen all at once. Maybe like it needs to come back. We need to keep coming back and seeing what else is here. What else is still keeping my heart closed to you? What else is still keeping your heart closed? If you're doing this by yourselves, maybe writing it out, writing for a period of time, and then over a few days and weeks, months. And then asking someone to hear it, to hear what you have to say, to really listen deeply. Now, often before I go into some of these three areas about reconciliation, we often talk about non-self in Buddhism, this sense of there is a not an established sense of self that's here. You have to be very careful that that isn't a dodge. It isn't a way that we spiritually bypass our hurts, but bypass the ways that we've caused harm and the ways that we received harm. This is really about being fully human, fully owning this human condition. And from that full owning of that, meeting that with a full-hearted, unflinching gaze, with a deep quality of compassion and wisdom, that's when true non-self reveals itself. So three aspects came to mind around this: truth-telling, an undefended listening, and a commitment to repair and future non-harm. So truth-telling. So this is the relative truth of your own experience, not the absolute truth of this is what absolutely happened. That's going back to this clinging around views and opinions. This is a fundamental thing that as meditation practitioners, we start to hold our views and opinions, hopefully more and more lightly. And paradoxically, we're also able to hold others more fully. Let me hear your side. Let me hear what is here. So both sides in a conflict have their own perspective, their own experience of what happened. And that's valid. There's a validity in how you experience that. Both have experienced suffering and harm. And so it takes a lot of courage to be willing to speak of that, to be able to voice it. It takes a lot of trust to be willing to be listened to, that you would be listened to and not re-harmed. This goes back to that timing, the container, and also the discernment. You know, is this a relationship that, you know, has that potential for reconciliation? But we always have that potential within our own minds, our own hearts, to find that place of healing. So part of this honest speaking, this speaking the truth is honesty, this fundamental owning our own experience. You know, those fundamentals that we may have learned in therapy of using I statements, that this is my experience. I'm feeling pain. I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling sad. Versus you made me angry. You know, objective descriptions of the action. Saying something like, when you hung up on me, versus when you acted out your repressed rage and abandoned me and slammed down the phone. You know, that's an elaboration. That's interpretation. Keep it very objective and simple. Avoiding universal statements like, you always are like that. You will never be a loving person. These absolute statements simply are not true. These three things are really easy to say, but they're hard to do. They're hard to learn how to really own your experience. To say, okay, I'm feeling this way. And this is your action that did it with a lot of clarity. It took me years of working therapeutically to be able to start to tease out that tendency to avoid my own responsibility for my experience. So this way we start to acknowledge also the full picture, not only the harm that we experience and the impact of our actions, but also the suffering that led to those actions. You know, what's the suffering that caused me to cause you harm? To hear that. Needing space to voice these. To understand this may go very deep, deeper than even the relationship may go back to some of our wounding from many, many years ago. So this is the section of just that truth speaking, speaking what is true. And then there's the quality of receiving that, of deep listening, of undefended listening, hearing the other person, the other side from an undefended place, being willing to let go of your own beliefs, your convictions, at least for the time being, to really let the reality of the other person seep into you. So you really know, okay, this is their perspective. Not in a way to kind of fake it, but to really understand that. If you've ever been lucky enough to do this with another person, it's such an amazing experience to go from your own guarded, defended position to suddenly really understand a completely different way of viewing the situation, a very different way of being in the world. And when you do that, compassion naturally arises from that. So you see that the reality of the other person really be seen, really be known, letting the validity of their point of view. I think it's best to have feedback if you're actually hearing it right, to practice paraphrasing. This is what I heard you said. And if the person says, no, you missed it, it's really this. Not only helps you hear better, but helps them clarify what they're really trying to say. And this feedback, when you really feel heard by another person, there's a way that there's something relaxes in you that's profound. There's that knot of not being seen, not being heard, not being acknowledged softens. Like you really know this other person has seen you. And with something that's so tender as an interpersonal conflict. And the final one is a commitment for repair and future non-harm. This willingness to, it really springs from this deep speaking of the truth, this deep listening, this undefended listening, and then seeing how can I, this commitment to non-harm, future non-harm in this relationship naturally comes forth. How I don't want to cause this harm again, how I don't want to perpetuate my unskillfulness. And it needs agreement. It needs a quality of, yeah, that would work for me. I would feel comfortable with that. And of course, you know, oftentimes we may want something that the person cannot give and vice versa. And so you compromise and maybe one person wants to be in the relationship, another person wants to reconcile and never see you again or have that quality of letting that go. This is part of that process of this dance. So we may be blessed, fortunate enough to be able to have someone who's willing to work with reconciliation, or if there's an individual that's been harmed by a group, or a group that's been harmed by an individual, to have that quality of deep listening. But it may not be possible, may not be available because of unwillingness, or maybe that person's no longer alive. But we can do this by ourselves, learning to deeply listen, deeply speak the truth, having a commitment, giving it a clarity of maybe writing it out, reflection, letting yourself see the situation as fully as you can, understanding that you don't know, you never know the other side completely, another side, another person. And find someone who you trust, who to listen to you and maybe give you gentle feedback about where you might still be not seeing the whole picture, may you still be held by those views. And in this way, reconciliation takes that deep interpersonal harm and turns it, ideally, into a place of growth, a place of intimacy, and a place of healing. And then forgiveness and reconciliation allows us to really free the moment, to free the relationship, to see how it's actually arising in this day, in this moment. So I hope those of some benefit, those reflections are of some benefit, and thank you for listening.
Do you want me to put up the...
Yes, you're right. We're going to move on to a formal asking of forgiveness, and Tori is going to do a screen share with those phrases. And the way that we've done this, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tori, that we'll first, as guiding teachers, ask for forgiveness and grant forgiveness to the Sangha, and then we'll ask for your forgiveness from others.
Yep.
So we read through this, the two of us, and then we all read it together?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure if I unmuted myself. Yeah, so that's what we're going to do. We're just going to bow after each one. I'll ring a bell after each one. I'll ring the bell at the end, after ours, and then after everybody does theirs.
Okay. So right now, the Sangha is just going to listen and receive us sharing this. And then you have a chance to say it for yourselves.
Yeah.
You know, I'll lead that. And you can read along with me. All right. Forgiveness for oneself. There are many ways that I have hurt and harmed myself. Tori, it might be better if you're muted just because of the Zoom. We're going to be kind of truncating. And I'll ring the bell after everything.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yes, but I can't really unmute it now. So go ahead. I just won't say anything.
Here, I'll mute you for you. Please forgive me for anything I've done there. Okay, forgiveness for oneself. There are many ways that I have hurt and harmed myself. I have betrayed myself knowingly and unknowingly in thoughts, words, and deeds. For the many ways my fear, pain, anger, and confusion has caused me harm, as best I am able, I extend a full and heartfelt forgiveness. I forgive myself. Forgiveness from others. Just as I have caused harm to myself, there are many ways that I have hurt and caused and harmed others. I may have knowingly and unknowingly caused them harm by my thoughts, words, and deeds. If out of my fear, pain, anger, and confusion, I have caused you any harm, I ask for your forgiveness. As best as you're able, please forgive me. Forgiveness for those who have hurt or harmed you. There are also many ways that I have been hurt and harmed by others. I may have been harmed knowingly and unknowingly by another's thought, words, and deeds. I remember the ways others, out of their fear, pain, anger, and confusion, have harmed me. I believe I have carried this pain in my heart long enough. As best as I am able, I offer my heartfelt forgiveness to all those who have caused me harm. I forgive you. All right, so I was speaking for Tori and myself, and now I'll read these again, and now I invite you to read along with me in those phrases for whoever you, the two of us, Tori and myself, and also anyone else in your life. Forgiveness for oneself. There are many ways that I have hurt and harmed myself. I have betrayed myself knowingly and unknowingly in thoughts, words, and deeds. For the many ways my fear, pain, anger, and confusion has caused me harm, as best I am able, I extend a full and heartfelt forgiveness. I forgive myself. And we can bow. Forgiveness from others. Just as I have caused harm to myself, there are many ways that I have hurt and harmed others. I may have knowingly and unknowingly caused them harm by my thoughts, words, and deeds. If out of my fear, pain, anger, and confusion, I have caused you any harm, I ask for your forgiveness. As best as you're able, please forgive me. And a deep bow. Forgiveness for those who have hurt or harmed you. There are also many ways that I have been hurt and harmed by others. I may have been harmed knowingly and unknowingly by another's thought, words, and deeds. I remember the ways others, out of their fear, pain, anger, and confusion, have harmed me. I believe I have carried this pain in my heart long enough. As best as I am able, I offer my heartfelt forgiveness to all those who have harmed me. I forgive you. And a deep bow. All right, thank you.
So that is a forgiveness for us and each other. And the next layer of forgiveness, this last piece, is the bowing piece. And I can't bow like I used to. So some of you may not be able to bow at all. I do a get down on the ground, a knee bow, but it takes a little bit. It's not the same as it used to be. It's a little harder. So I only do this when I do some kind of a ceremonial thing. But another way to bow is to just do what we did, sitting where you are, bowing. And another way to bow is to stand and then just bow at the waist. Whatever works for you is sufficient. You don't have to bow all the way down. But for those of you that have never participated in this bowing ceremony, I want to tell you a little bit about what we're going to do. There's a Kuan Yin song, a chant, that's just Namo Kuan Shir Yin Pusa. That's what it is. Namo Kuan Shir Yin Pusa. And it means it's a homage that we pay to Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva, who listens to the cries of the world. And it's a chant that's going to repeat itself. It's sung by Kittisaro and Tenesara. And it's a little CD I have of theirs. And they do this over and over and over for 45 minutes. We're not going to do it for 45 minutes. But the bowing that they taught us that goes along with this is that Tim and I are going to take turns bowing. One of us will stand and the other one will bow. And when that bow, we'll bow for the full cycle of the chant. And then that group will stand and the other side will go down and bow. You can pick whoever you want to bow with, Tim or me, it doesn't matter. You're just going to, when I stand, you stand. When I bow, you bow, or vice versa with Tim. So I thought about this. We've been doing this bowing back and forth for a while now, and I don't know why I didn't think about this before, but I realized when I was kind of practicing so I could make sure I could get down and get back up again, that when we're standing, we could think about people in our lives that we need to ask for forgiveness for, or we need to be, we need to release and forgive them, or whatever. While we're standing there listening to the cycle through, we could begin to contemplate who we would like to release or who we would like to ask for forgiveness from. And then when we go down on the bow, you basically let it go. Just release that, you know, energy as best you're able. And then when you come back up, you think of someone else that you've harmed or someone that's harmed you. Just one at a time, because we'll do several up and downs, up and downs, up and downs, up and down. And we'll just, when we're standing, we're contemplating and feeling into the felt sense of harm, either that we received from someone else, that we need to let go of, if we're ready to let go of it. And then when we go down, we let it go. We let it go. We let it go. And then when we stand up, we think of another, and then some harm I did to someone. And when I go down, I let go that I did that harm. And we'll just do this back and forth, Tim and I. You can tell when the chant changes and the up and down will make sense completely. I'll go down first. We'll all stand and then I'll go down and then I'll come up and Tim will go down and back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for a while. And then eventually Tim will stand and I'll come up and I will stay when he comes back up again. And so that's how we'll know it's over with, is because I won't go back down again. All right. So get yourself a space for the bowing if you're going to do this full bowing. Let me turn my computer here so we can see. Uh-huh.
Ah. Cheers.